business.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
All right. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Next Fan Up. My name is Mark Sitko. I am the super fan for the Eagles. And tonight with me, I have Andrew, who is our Jets super fan. How you doing, Andrew?
I think you know the answer to that question, Mark.
No, I'm excited to talk to you about your game. I think it was closer than a lot of people expected, and that's awesome. I think you guys had a good chance to win it. I'm just excited to hear how it went. Tom is also with us. He is the Chicago super fan. How you doing, Tom?
Bears didn't lose this week.
Nice, the bye week. Yeah, the bye week saves you. Awesome, awesome. Nick, how are you doing, buddy? We have Nick here as well. He is our Chargers super fan. Our Chiefs super fan. I'm sorry. How are you
how
doing?
How dare you? How dare you, sir?
I was just talking crap about Ken as well. We'll get to that eventually. But Nick, I know that you are not that fan. How are you doing, buddy?
Well, you know, these last several weeks that I've been on the program, I've been sort of wondering whether or not my appearances here have been catharsis or simply reliving the trauma of being a Chiefs fan. But we won this week, so therefore it's good. I don't have to be treated by you lunatics anymore.
Nice. I wanted to – I don't know if I picked you guys. I have to go back and look at my pick-em, but I wanted to pick you in that game, and I thought you guys did well. That was a great win. We'll get to it in a second. Let's start off right away. We're going to jump to the New York Jets game because Andrew has to leave us early tonight. So, Andrew, what happened in this game? You guys lost by 7. Obviously, you weren't blown out. You weren't crushed. How did this game go, and how did your team hold up?
It was the same thing that most Jets-Patriots games have been the past couple of years, close games. Both teams played well, but when you're on the road, you're facing a good team, you can't afford not to execute. And there were at least 4 or 5 plays I could think off the top of my head that cost the Jets this game, whether it be Brandon Marshall dropping the touchdown to put them ahead 8 or 9 points in the middle of the fourth quarter, or if it was 3rd and 17 that they gave up to, I believe it was Edelman who made the catch over the middle on the Patriots go-ahead drive, or Jeff Cumberland dropping a touchdown, Ryan Fitzpatrick's fumble in the first series, which is only the first play of the game, which is the first Jets offensive play of the game. The Jets played well, and they're a good team. And I don't think it's unreasonable to say at all that they are a favorite to make the playoffs. But it's just very frustrating to know that we're still second class when it comes to the Patriots, and that we're probably, if we're going to make any noise in the postseason, it's probably going to have to be on the road. Because if the Jets won this game, they steal a game on the road and they're in first place, and then they have another game with New England back at home with an easy schedule the rest of the way. The Jets legitimately could have had a first round bye. Now, it's still only 6 games. They're 4-2. That's obviously still a possibility, but the margin for error has erased. They can't afford to lose to teams like Houston or Oakland or Jacksonville. They have to win those games, and it's just very frustrating because when the Jets played the Eagles, Mark, you took offense to how I said how the Jets weren't at full strength and that if Ivory didn't play well that game, he didn't even play that game. And that was the biggest reason the Jets didn't win the game. Today, on Chris Ivory's first carry, I'm watching it with a bunch of my friends, and he's running towards the outside, and he just slows down and cuts back towards the inside, and was like, that was a weird play. And then he didn't play another snap for another 2-3 drives because it seemed like he had a hamstring injury and he just wasn't the same the rest of the game. And that fact slowed them down. But Fitzpatrick played
I agree with you. If he had played in our game, in the Eagles game, I don't know if you guys would have won, but that would have been a much closer game. And, yeah, I think there was a good chance you would have been able to beat us. He's a great running back. I think he's one of the best running backs going right now. What else did you see in the game? Anything else you want to say?
It was interesting to me that the Jets corners and their safeties weren't jumping pass routes, because it seemed like the Jets were giving them the 4 to 6 yard passes and were looking to make a tackle at the line and give them third downs and try to stop them. And it was working to a certain extent, but you're going to have to get pressure on Brady or make Brady turn the ball over to win the game. And they didn't do that. They didn't get much pressure. They got some pressure. Like, it was more of a pressure in that it was a progressive pressure, and that it wasn't right off the line. Like, Brady had 2 to 3 seconds, and all the Jets, either Harrison or Wilkerson or Richardson, were sort of bull rushing their offensive line. and tightening the pocket on Brady, but it wasn't an instant pressure. So it allowed Brady to get the ball out after two seconds, like he usually does on those little outs and those little ins to Amendola, Edelman. But they didn't make plays. The Jets defense did not make plays this game. But again, I can't be too disappointed. I did pick the Patriots to win a close game, and that's what happened.
Yeah. I love that you guys put up a fight. I don't know who's going to beat New England. This is a tough, it's a tough battle, and that's a great coach, and that's a great quarterback, and they somehow have kept that defense formidable.
The Patriots, I'm the same rationale that I had last week when we were talking about Patriots Colts. I think the Patriots had a better team last year than they do this year. Maybe the NFL in itself isn't as good. Like, it's a much top-heavier NFL. But I don't think the Patriots are as good as they did last year. They ran the ball 9 times this week, and 5 of those rushes were by Tom Brady. So they knew they weren't going to be able to run the ball on the Jets. And their offensive line is going to be an issue for teams who have strong D-lines, and they're going to have to be one-dimensional. And in the playoffs, that's an issue. And they're not invincible. The Patriots are not invincible. And that's what little sliver of hope is still there for any team in the AFC to come in and go into Foxborough with a victory. The Jets almost did it today, and they have Ryan Fitzpatrick playing quarterback. While you have guys like Roethlisberger, could have said Peyton Manning last year, but there are other quarterbacks in the AFC that could come in Foxborough and win a playoff game.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how far they go. So, Andrew, I know you may have to go. We're going to start back on the Thursday game. If you have to jump out just any time, feel free. But also, we love your insight. Anything you want to say, man. We jump out here with Seattle SF. Tom, you got a chance to look at this game. Obviously, Seattle came out on top. They kind of blew them out. What did the game look like? What did you learn?
Well, it was 20-3, and it really wasn't even that competitive. I never really felt like San Francisco was in this game at any time. It seemed fairly obvious to me that Seattle wanted to run them over. Marshawn looked good despite the fact that he was throwing up on the sideline. I never did find out why that was. Maybe he had too many Skittles or something. But Lynch had 122 yards on 27 carries. Thomas Rawls had 32 more on 6 carries, and I think Fred Jackson even had a couple. They ran the ball very, very well against San Francisco, and they ran very often against them. That was a good thing because Russell Wilson was his usual inconsistent self. He made some very, very good throws. He had one deep throw to Tyler Lockett for a touchdown in the first half that was really wonderful. But there were some missed throws all over the place, and I'd have to say that he probably did more damage with his legs than anything else this game. He was sacked 5 times. That offensive line is not good. I think everybody knows that by now, and they were not good again on Thursday either. San Francisco, it was really all about Colin Kaepernick and the fact that he still just doesn't look confident and doesn't look comfortable. San Francisco was holding guys in to provide extra protection all night. I mean, it was double tight ends and a running back all the time. And despite that, he was still missing open receivers. I think he had a hard time finding open receivers because Seattle continued to rush 4 and continued to get pressure on him a little bit here and there. But even when they were open, he wasn't finding them. He wasn't making good throws. Twitter was all abuzz about the fact that they were treating some guy that he beamed on the sidelines with a really lousy throw. And they were never really in it offensively. They just didn't have it Thursday night.
Do you think Kaepernick has to go?
Oh, gosh. I mean, he doesn't look like the same guy that we saw, just a couple of years ago. He looks like he forgot how to play quarterback. And I don't know how you solve it. I don't know if you can solve it. That's not an answer to your question. I guess I don't have an answer, but boy, if he keeps going like this, I think you better start considering finding a replacement somewhere. There aren't many guys in the NFL that you can just pick up out of nowhere, but maybe you start thinking about drafting somebody. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and supposedly this next draft is not good, but I don't know college ball well, but I hear this upcoming draft is not – there's not going to be a Winston and Mariota going 1 and 2, from what I understand. Yes. You know, there's not even anybody on those levels.
It's not good. The Bears are in a market, and I'm not happy with what I see. The guy in Cal, Goff, he's the only one that looks like he's really got it, and then he blows up and he throws 5 interceptions the other night, and some guy, a friend of mine, whispered the words Jay Cutler, and it froze my heart. The only thing worse than having Jay Cutler as a quarterback is drafting one.
I would hate
if that's what he is.
Yeah, high pick for something next Cutler. God, woo, scary. So moving on to the Minnesota-Detroit game. Tom and I both watched this game, but I'll kick it off since Tom just did the last one. So there's this writer for Philadelphia. He's a beat writer, local beat writer that I really love, Jimmy Kemsky. What's amazing about him is he started as very much a fan who started his own blog and eventually now got hired, quit his day job, and has become a beat writer. And he's probably one of the best beats in Philly. And he does this thing every week called the NFC Obituaries. And he basically just goes through and gives everyone's record. It's kind of like an anti-power ranking. It goes from the worst teams to the best. And if a team has lost so many games that they are like dead for the season, not going to make the playoffs, he writes their obituary. And I think Detroit might need their obituary written this week. They're one of the first teams that I think we can say they're just done for this year. Just to go over some stats here, Bridgewater was 25 for 35. He threw 2 touchdowns, had 316 yards, very, very impressive. All day went 98 yards on 19 carries. When you get close to 100 yards and you don't have 20 carries, that is always impressive in my book. Detroit had no second half points in the game other than a safety. They score 14 in the first quarter, then 3 in the second, and then basically just poop the bed. Yeah, just really sad. Stafford, 8 for 26, 256, and 2 touchdowns. Not bad, but obviously not enough. Detroit has no running game. And that's why it's fascinating to hear Andrew talk about the Patriots didn't even try to run. They know they can't do the running game against that Jets front 7. And so they just throw the ball, and they can do that. They can rely on their quarterback to win them a game. Clearly, Stafford is nowhere near capable of that on the same level. Even though we only threw 8 incompletions, it just wasn't enough. They can't compete. Minnesota had a great game. I was impressed. Next, we should jump to Buffalo, Jacksonville. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to throw in, AP had 98 yards, but 75 of those came on one carry. Other than that, Detroit stacked the box and really stopped him cold. Having really settled down and watched this game, I can say that Minnesota's problem is their receivers. I don't think they can get open. They still were good enough to beat the Lions. The Lions they converted 1/3 down all day, which is really bad. And the other thing I really want to mention, both of these quarterbacks got hit a lot because both offensive lines are horrible, but Stafford got sacked 7 times and they were utterly helpless for a large part of the third quarter and part of the fourth because Minnesota would just blitz and nobody could block them and Stafford couldn't get rid of the ball. It was really bad football, and I just thought it was worth pointing that out.
About Minnesota's receivers is that this week they finally unleashed Stephon Diggs, and he made someone look silly on a double move for a long touchdown. He's a lot more advanced in his route running than I thought he'd be at this stage of his career coming out of Maryland, where he missed a lot of time. He was a much more of a straight line guy, but it seems like they're ready to give him a shot. And he's proven that the coaches to be very smart in doing so over the past couple of weeks. And if he could be a legit passing threat, then they have multidimensional offense with a good defense, with a great coach. And I think Mike Zimmer, they could very well be a playoff team this year. I know by now Pod's not into them. And Falcons, he has that bet with the Falcons and Vikings, and the Falcons didn't look too good today. They still came out with a W. But I'd be a bit concerned if I was Jay on that bet because Minnesota looks legit.
Yeah, Diggs had 108 yards on 6 receptions. He had a good day, no doubt about it.
And Minnesota, yeah, they're definitely on their way out. They remind me of Oakland. They're kind of the Oakland of the NFC to me. It's a team that I think in another year or two could be very, very formidable. Buffalo-Jacksonville.
Go ahead. I'm just saying, I think Davey wouldn't be too thrilled with that comparison. Comparing the Vikings to the Raiders.
Buffalo, Jacksonville. You had a chance to watch this, Tom. What did you think of this game? What did you see?
It turned out to be a close game, 34-31. At one point, it was 27-3. The game was pretty well defined by three straight possessions in the second quarter. The first one, E.J. Manuel didn't recognize pressure coming off the edge. He fumbled the ball, and Jacksonville ran it in for a touchdown. That's one defensive touchdown. Literally less than 2 minutes later, Emmanuel he got picked off by Telvin Smith. That was a pick six. That was 14 points. And then on the next possession, Paul Posluszny, well, I can never pronounce his name. Sorry. He also had an interception. That was another pick six. That miserable second quarter pretty much sank Buffalo. Jacksonville went into a shell offensively and defensively. Buffalo got back into this game. Emmanuel, to his credit, didn't crumble after that and still came back to be reasonably good for the rest of the game. And they actually, you know, looked like they might win it for a while there, but Jacksonville did finally pull it out in the end with a last second possession. I have to say, Buffalo, you know, they look like the better team, but they make so many mistakes. This looks like a Rex Ryan coach team, mm-hmm. you know, all mm-hmm. over. There was one play in the first half where a tight end, Chris Gregg, uncovered, really caught the ball out of bounds. I mean, nobody around him. It was completely boneheaded. And right before that, Buffalo sent the wide receiver into motion. He was crossing behind the center. The center snapped it right into him. I mean, it was a circus out there, and that's, you know, that's not great discipline. It does kind of make you wonder if they're going to make those kinds of mistakes. I don't know how far they're going to go.
Yeah. The thing that would concern me is that, yeah, they dug themselves a huge hole. And with EJ Manuel, you're down 27-3, the game is over. And yet they came back and took the lead. They were up 31-27, and that supposed 85 Bears defense couldn't stop Blake Bortles and company from driving down the field to win the game. Yeah. So if you can't rely on your defense if you're Buffalo, then I don't know what you could hang your hat on. And with Miami looking rejuvenated in the AFC and with the Pats and Jets both playing well today, I think it's safe to say, at least at this point, that Buffalo is in deep trouble.
It's actually even worse than that, Hirsch, because Buffalo, you could tell they did not respect the Jaguars' running game at all. The Jaguars have struggled to run, and Buffalo was light in the box all game. You'd have double tight ends, and there'd be six guys in the box. They did not respect their running game at all. So they had even more guys back to defend the pass, and yet Jacksonville still managed to pass the ball on them and score that late touchdown. It was really funny to watch, and I don't really know exactly what the problem is, but there's definitely a problem there.
I feel like we got to get to Nick. Nick, we've been talking about all these different teams. We've got to get to one of your games. Pittsburgh, Kansas City, your team won this game. How did it go? How did you play?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Chiefs finally got the monkey off their back. They broke their five-game losing streak and got the win here. I mean, actually, most of this game, I think, at least through the eyes of a Chiefs fan, it looked like a replay of the Chicago Bears game a couple of weeks ago, where they were moving the ball well, and the defense was playing extremely well against the Pittsburgh Steelers. But they were settling for field goals every single time. But in the end, I mean, they were able to get things going and still, I mean, basically, we're offensively were by far the better team in this game. But, you know, this is the Steelers run by, the third string quarterback for the Steelers. He threw a couple of picks, which helped the Chiefs stay in it. It feels great to get the win. And I think it settles down a lot of the talk through, you know, KC Kingdom about, do we need to, you know, make changes to the coaching staff? Should we bench Alex Smith? There was a lot of panic. As happens when you're 1-5, I still think the Chiefs are probably, they would have to win almost every single game for the rest of the season to make it back in the playoffs. But at the same time, they don't play. They only have one game against a team that currently has a winning record. That would be on the road to the Broncos after the bye. So, you know, the way that this team tends to be streaky, you could see it happening. But, you know, still in this game, I still think that, you know, as good as it feels to get the win, this was a great – this is like the perfect matchup for the Chiefs defense, where you have a young and experienced quarterback that's going to be shaken by the blitz and by the pass rush. It's going to make some mistakes that you can capitalize on, which gives you just enough for your, you know, fairly lethargic offense to take advantage of and control the game. But they're not going to have that every single week. And I'm not sure that the Chiefs would win this game if Big Ben was healthy and behind the helm there. Nonetheless, you know, it was good to see that the Chiefs could get something going on the ground with the absence of Jamaal Charles. And an optimist would say that, well, look, this is, you know, it took the Chiefs, you know, most of the Vikings game and, you know, to get to the point where they figured out how to have an offense without Jamaal Charles, who is one of their best receiving options and obviously by far their best running option. But, you know, it feels good, but I guess I have tempered optimism about the team still.
Yeah. No, it's so funny. Like we've talked about in the past, Nick, being an Eagles fan and knowing Andy Reid, you remind me so much of times we were struggling with Andy, and not in a bad way. I would actually say in the good side of what's happening. Andy will win the game he's supposed to win. When you go up against Pittsburgh and they don't have their starting quarterback, and like you said, a young quarterback, Andy knows how to win that game, and he will win that game. He's not. And I think you were close in a lot of the games you lost, and you were competitive, and that's Andy. He's going to keep you in games. He's going to make you competitive, and I think you guys are better than your record. Not that people hate that. I know we are what our records say, but your team will turn and get more wins down the end. You will win. I think you will end up above 500 if I had to guess, even if it is only 9-7.
Really?
I think you're heading that direction. I think so. Wow. And maybe I'm wrong, but
I think you're very wrong.
Really?
Any team quarterback with Alex Smith, with no running game, and like with a very shoddy offensive line, I don't think is going anywhere. And I was going to ask Nick if, like, I had the Chiefs winning this game, just to put it out there. But my question to Nick would be, at what point do you start, I want to say rooting for losses, but being like, okay, because I could relate to this last year when the Jets beat the Titans in week 15 or beat the Dolphins in week 17 and cost themselves a shot at Mariota. At what point do you sort of go, oh, okay, our team sucks. Like, why are we going to be winning these games that doesn't actually help us in the future? We'd be better served actually losing these games.
Hold on, let me just do the schedule. Before you go, I want you to answer, Nick, but let me just say, this is their schedule. This is also why I think they have a good chance. Next week, Lions at Broncos next, after the bye, by far their hardest game left. Then it's Chargers, Bills, Raiders, Chargers, Ravens, Browns, Raiders. Those teams all suck. Those teams are all worse. Other than the Broncos, those teams are all worse than the Chiefs. So if the Chiefs
I would say that these teams are all in the same vicinity. Like, as I said earlier, the NFL is a very top-heavy league, and that all these teams are in the same area, and I don't think any of them are going to separate from each other. And if they're just going to beat up on each other, it's going to be a bunch of 5-11, 6-10 teams, and I think the Chiefs are going to be one of them.
What I would say is, of all those teams, the one team that has a good coach is Andy Reid. And yes, the running game is exactly where you have the point. If he had a running game, he'd be fine. Nick, what were you going to say? Sorry to cut you off, buddy.
Well, so in terms of the whole, you know, the let's just suck and get ourselves a quarterback next year. I mean, there were a lot of Chiefs fans that were at that point over this last week. I mean, the difference is that unless the Chiefs are absolutely the worst team in the league, they're not going to. I mean, that's like we were talking about before. I mean, this is going to be another one of those drafts where I think even if the Chiefs had the first overall pick, they may not get themselves a franchise quarterback. There may not be anyone to pick, or even if the guys that were available may not be that guy.
Yeah, that's never happened before.
Yeah. Well, what about the 2013 draft when the Chiefs had the first overall?
That, That's what I was referring to.
Right. Yeah. So we picked Eric Fisher, who, by the way, actually, after how awful he's been, especially compared to his draft status, he finally moved back to the left side of the line. He's actually been the Chiefs' best lineman in terms of like PFF grades and stuff this year, which is weird. But now he's back to left tackle. Who knows? Maybe he'll still be that franchise left tackle. But no, I mean, it's difficult because as much as we do have this very soft stretch ahead of us, it's just, and it's not that I don't believe in Andy Reid. It's just, it's extremely hard to win almost all of your games in this league. These are all competitive teams, even though they're all, but I still think, I think the Chiefs, in terms of the talent they have on their roster, are on the top half of the league in terms of just pure talent. If they can figure out a way to make it work with a running game, and look, they sort of did here. Charcandrick West had 110 yards on 22 carries, something like that. They were able to make it work. They have enough of a balanced attack to move it. Granted, this is against a Big Ben-less Steelers, but I could see it happening. I would say it's definitely not the most likely outcome, and with Alex Smith, the case has always been it's always been the same with him. The I get painted as being an Alex Smith apologist, but I don't think I am. I think I'm an Alex Smith realist. He is pretty much in the middle of the road. I think about half the league would be better off with him as their quarterback. And the Chiefs are not going to be. It's not going to be an easy road for them to the Super Bowl until they have someone better than him. But if you can show me, the path to an available franchise quarterback, I'll sign up. But that's the thing, is there's just never been the ability for the Chiefs to get someone better. So, when the Chiefs were really bad this season, it was a combination of truly, his limitations were contributing to the losses, definitely. The offensive line was putrid. There were games where it was just, like a high school offensive line out there. And some of the play calling was just so mismatched with the situation. Andy Reid was sort of going off in his having his mini aneurysms throughout the games. And it was just totally unexplainable why he was calling the things he was calling at times. And I think it was like a three-way tie of those three things being the big reasons why the Chiefs were losing, as well as big defensive breakdowns late in games. But now actually this game, the offensive line was playing remarkably well compared to its previous performances. And even with Macklin out, finally some of the other receivers are starting to step up, because basically beside Macklin, there's Smith still has no one to throw to. Enough of running game was moving. So when you have everything else moving, Smith is enough for the Chiefs to get a win, especially with as good as the defense is. Will he ever be the savior, the person who's totally putting the team on his back? No, that's just never gonna happen. The Chiefs don't have that kind of player. But by the way, Andrew Luck's not getting it done either. When other things are failing around him. I think there's sort of this fallacy that, if you have a big, if you have a good quarterback, you'll be undefeated automatically. It's just it doesn't matter if you have a bad offensive line. So it's a tough situation. Obviously I would love for the Chiefs to get a better quarterback than Alex Smith, but there's just not a clear path there. And in the meantime, I would like the Chiefs to continue trying to make it to consecutive playoff appearances. I guess it wouldn't be this year, but keep in the contention. And I definitely don't want to see this coaching staff and this front office get blown up, because I do think it's the best we've had in a very long time.
Yeah, I think Andy is wonderful, and you guys are in good shape. Speaking of that Indianapolis game, we jump to that next. New Orleans played Indianapolis, really blew them out. As you said, even with a great quarterback, that is not going to be enough. It really wasn't even close. This game went very quickly. Breeze and Luck both played, although Luck has been having some injuries. He was able to come back, but he didn't look really strong. I don't really want to know what to say here other than Indy just looks like garbage. And what's fascinating about what you were just saying, that what is the path to the franchise quarterback? If there's any, I think we'd all agree, if there's any team that has done it the best, just looking at the quarterback, it's Indianapolis. They went from Peyton Manning to Luck. They're two of the best made, both go into the Hall of Fame. But clearly it is only blind luck, because the Colts can't build a team really around either of those guys. I think Peyton played way better, made that team way better than it ever was. And now Luck is having to do the same thing, because those teams are run poorly. Indianapolis does not know how to build properly around those teams. I don't know why Luck, year and year again, is not given the weapons he needs. And it is so hard. I feel very much in a similar place to you that you are with KC, with the Sam Bradford. Everyone is bashing him like he's not Aaron Rodgers. And yeah, he's not Aaron Rodgers. He's just serviceable. But Chip is doing enough things. Our defense is strong enough. Other things should go well. But people are so critical of quarterbacks. It is crazy. People are calling for Bradford to be benched while he outplays Eli Manning. Eli Manning is throwing pick sixes. Is anybody asking him to be benched? No. Ridiculous. Okay. On. Houston, Miami. Oh, go ahead.
What I think is funny is the fact that Ryan Grigson wants Chuck Pagano out. Pagano's the one that's in trouble. There's no talent on that team. What are you supposed to coach? I mean, I've never seen such a thing. Our Houston rep, James, had a question that you may be interested in. He wanted to know if the Colts would be the first team in NFL history to go 6-0 in the division and make the playoffs at 6-10. So just as a matter of curiosity, I looked at their schedule. They have, outside of the division, they have what I consider to be one winnable game, and that is Tampa Bay at home. And if they lose that one, they'll be 6-10. They'll probably win the division. It's very possible. Oh,
that's so great. That's an amazing stat. Please let that happen. Tom, you also looked at Houston, Miami. How did this game look? Tannehill had some great numbers, broke the record, right? The NFL record for most consecutive passes. What did this game look like?
Miami must have had a wonderful time during this game. They won the game 44-26, but believe me, it was nowhere near that close. It was 41-0 at half. It was 35-0 before the Texans gained their first yard on offense. That's how bad this thing was. Miami was making plays all over the field. They made a lot of big plays. They got up very early, and they hung on and sort of cruised to the victory here. They dominated up front on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And Ndamukong Suh, our $100 million man, got his first sack of the year. So we can throw a party for that. The difference in the ball game, Houston rushed the ball 25 times for 71 yards. Miami rushed it 35 times for 248. And Lamar Miller had 175 yards of that on 14 carries, including an 85-yard TD. So they really ran the ball well. That's exactly what they did last week. They finally started running the ball under Dan Campbell, and apparently it's a winning formula for them. On the other side of the ball, Arian Foster only had 59 yards on 16 carries until he got hurt. He has ruptured his Achilles. He is out for the year. That is not good. You're right. Tannehill, he passed Donovan McNabb to set the NFL record for the most completions in a row, 25. The only thing I have to say about Miami is last week it was Tennessee. This week it was Houston. I'd really like to see them beat somebody good before I'll be a believer. But I like what I see. I think they look much better at the line of scrimmage. As far as I'm concerned, that's how you win football games.
We were talking about Indianapolis and that how Ryan Grigson should be worried about his job because there's not much talent on that team. Besides Watt, Hopkins, and Clowney, and like maybe Dwayne Brown, Houston's roster is so barren of talent. To me, if I had to pick the worst team in the league, they would be it. They can't even go to their backup quarterback because he can't catch a flight. Like they can't have him be the leader of the team. Brian Hoyer was under 3 yards per attempt in the first half. He ended up having 3 touchdowns and 1 interception. I don't think I've ever seen a box score lie as much as that box score lied because he was brutal. He was absolutely brutal. And as you said, the game was 35-0 before they gained a yard on offense. So you could just imagine.
Wow. I saw one of my favorite jokes I've ever seen on Twitter. Somebody took a picture of the coach of Houston, and it was like at the top of the screen, you could see the score. It was like 44 to whatever. And they had superimposed from Madden. It just said across the screen, your opponent has quit the game. And the tweet was just rage quit. Do you guys know rage quitting in Madden where you're just getting beat so bad you just quit out? Man, that made me laugh so hard. I was laughing. I was like, oh, your opponent has quit the game. So good. Cleveland, St. Louis. Nick, you checked this game out. What did you see?
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for Cleveland because a lot of their problems remind me of Kansas City's problems in that, you know, they, like Josh McCown, you know, his stat sheet's okay. He's able to move the ball most of the time. But the thing is, they're just totally, absolutely, you know, they will go as far as Gary Barnidge goes, their tight end. And he is not some sort of great playmaker. He's not Gronk. He just happens to be the guy who's able to catch the ball and make things happen most of the time. If they don't have some sort of big play from Travis Benjamin, they just have no shot in this game. And granted, I mean, it was really, it was their miscues that basically buried them into the, you know, they had four lost fumbles. They ended up losing 6-24 to the Rams, you know, in the Rams' home, which, by the way, I have to point out that the Rams' turf, their home turf, looks awful. I mean, it literally looks like your grandma's back porch. It just does not look like anything like a football field. And I have no idea if this has anything to do with it, but one of the funniest moments of the game was just, I mean, funny and sort of a morbid, you know, whatever slapstick way. I don't like people getting hurt, but the fact that Josh McCown like ran off the field and then realized he was on concrete and couldn't really stop and ended up going straight into a wall and injured himself because he ran into a wall that had like a banner over like a railing. So he basically ran into the railing with his arm. And you know, it's just like this place, I mean, their dome is just so rickety and crappy. It's kind of amazing.
I think St. Louis is having a competition with San Diego with which team like wants to get out of their city more, like how blatantly obvious they want to be in LA. So it's pretty funny.
Yeah, let's just put some like spike pits on the sidelines and see if any player like falls in and dies. I mean, it's just kind of amazing. I mean, also on the Rams side though, Todd Gurley is just an extremely fun player to watch. I think he's going to be a rock star for a long time in this league. I mean, he looks like some sort of mix between Adrian Peterson and Jamal Charles. And I don't bring up, you know, the Lord our Savior, Jamal Charles, and use his name in vain. I mean, it really, he was electric in this game with 19 carries for 128 yards and 2 touchdowns. The Rams are sticking with it. They're going to be continue to make noise. And they actually, I mean, they really could take that division.
Gurley's one of those guys that Gurley's one of those guys that you can see he just runs different. Like when you watch Pearson run, it looks like it's almost like he's galloping. And like when you watch Gurley, it seems like he's moving in slow motion, but yet like he's running faster than everybody else. And guys are just bouncing off of him. Like he's legit. And again, I agree. He's going to be around and probably the first pick of fantasy drafts for the next 10 years.
Tom, you looked at the Atlanta-Tennessee game. Very low scoring, strange for a modern football game. What'd you see?
Yeah, this was a defensive battle. It was pretty much a contest of which offense was worse, and that was Tennessee. Atlanta won 10-7. They had Zach Mettenberger at quarterback instead of Marcus Mariota, and it showed. Tennessee had one third down conversion all game. And Mettenberger's got a nice strong arm, but he had what you call Charlie Whitehurst syndrome because it was just short pass after short pass, dump off after dump off that went nowhere. Probably the best player in this game was Devonta Freeman. He ran for 116 yards, and that was his third consecutive 100-yard gain. So that's really good. And hats off to Atlanta for winning, despite the fact that pretty much over the last month, Matt Ryan hasn't looked that good, and he didn't look that good today either. He threw for 251 yards, but he was pretty erratic. And he threw 2 interceptions. The second one was on a 4th-and-goal from the 1-yard line in the fourth quarter. And, you know, the Falcons have turned the ball over quite a bit the last couple games. I think they turned it over 6 times. This was 2 more. But they're winning despite all that. And sometimes, I guess, when it's your year, that's what you do. That's what they did today. They didn't play particularly well, at least offensively. But on the defense stepped up on balance. They were good enough to pull it out and win. And you can chalk up another one for them.
Nice. I'm very curious. I mean, it's impressive, like you said, that Atlanta's stacking those wins. But I don't think Atlanta should be struggling against Tennessee with a backup quarterback. I mean, it's one of the worst teams in the league with their back. I'm surprised. I thought Atlanta was going to go in there and blow that team out. Very interesting. I think Atlanta's defense is legit, but that offense needs to figure it out. We're seeing this a lot this year. I think these teams that all they really have is one offensive receiver and one great quarterback, that's clearly not enough. Week in and week out, teams can stop that. They show that it's just like we did with Eli Manning at ODB. It is easy to stop. You focus on it, and you can just shut one receiver down. And we're seeing it consistently. For Tennessee to be able to do that is very impressive. Tampa Bay, Washington. I got a chance to see this game. Tampa Bay gives up a 24-0 lead. In the NFL, you can't do that. If you're up by 17, there's no excuse that you lose that game. If you're up by 24, ridiculous. Daniel, our super fan, was just losing his mind on Slack as I was watching it happen. And I know, I understand, losing to the racist skins is really hard. But we have to point out, Cousins is playing great. 33 for 40, 317, three touchdowns, including on the winning drive when he needed it, goes straight down and scores. I'm impressed, man. I think Cousins has won that job. Cousins should be the quarterback next year in Washington. They should be figuring out how to build around him as long as they don't all lose their jobs. Winston didn't play. Go ahead.
I have to stop you there because I don't think Kirk Cousins is going to take a team anywhere. If he plays any defense that could blitz him and hold up in coverage at all, then he's done. Because in the face of pressure, he's thrown the most interceptions in football this year. And he doesn't have the arm strength to throw the ball off his back foot like he routinely does. He tries to emulate Cutler and Stafford, and he just doesn't have that arm to do it. And it's more because Jay Gruden doesn't want to play Griffin than that he's starting anything else. And yeah, he played well today, but also Tampa Bay's defense is nothing to write home about. I wouldn't build around Kirk Cousins. If there's a quarterback in the first round that you believe is a franchise guy, I still take him and see what you get for Cousins on the open market.
Yeah, I knew
Andrew. 28 years old.
I knew Andrew was going to be the one.
Anybody better? Go ahead. Sorry, Tom.
I knew Andrew was going to be the one to speak up here because I think they played the Jets last week and I watched that game. Cousins looked awful. I mean, his ball placement was terrible. He was scattershot. I thought it was the worst I've seen a quarterback perform all year, and I'm a Bears fan. So I got to tell you, I agree with Andrew here. I don't think Cousins is the answer. I think he's right. I think he put him up against good defenses, and all of a sudden things aren't so rosy, and I have a feeling they should be looking for a quarterback.
Interesting. I've seen him play well against the Eagles, and I have seen what you guys are talking about. We have gotten to him and shaken him before, and he's cost them games. I'm just seeing a trend moving up, and if he can fix that in him and get more confident and more comfortable, as Cam Newton has done and a lot of other quarterbacks, it took time, maybe he could be better. I'll just say this. He's the best quarterback that's been in Washington in decades. So he may be horrible, but for the past 20 years, I can't remember a quarterback better than him in D.C. You can't give Griffin his first year. That was some BS. They were just running the read option, and he's not a good quarterback. It's been decades, so I'm just saying.
It's Mark Brunell, baby.
This guy's not bad. Yeah, I guess. I don't know, man. I never loved Brunell, but you're right. Brunell is probably better than Cousins. I'm trying to argue that maybe Cousins
sort of jokingly too.
No, but he's the best. That is the best, though. That's how sad it is there. I mean, who else would it be? Oh, so pathetic. Regardless, let's jump over to the Oakland-San Diego game. Nick, you got it. Oh, wait, I want to say a couple more things in Tampa Bay. Some shout-outs. Reed is totally legit. He had a great game. Doug Martin, 136 on 19 carries. That's a great day. The Skins have no running game whatsoever. Alfred Morris was 6 carries for 5 yards. That is bad. They really don't have the running game, and they don't have anybody to really carry it, although they were able on a final drive to pull it off. Oakland-San Diego, Nick, what did you think of this game?
Speaking of teams with no running games, I give you the San Diego Chargers. they don't have anybody running the ball. Phillip Rivers had to throw it 58 times, which, I mean, granted, he's Phillip Rivers, but they just can't execute. They can't keep things going. They can't build around him. I mean, actually, on the ground, I mean, Danny Woodhead had another good day. But I think, I mean, Danny Woodhead is such he can only really use him the way that they use him, which is hand the ball to him 5 times when the other team is thinking you're going to pass, and he's so small they can't see him behind the line, and so he makes it like 5 yards upfield. Just because they didn't notice that Rivers doesn't have the ball in his hands anymore, because Danny Woodhead is like the height of a fourth grader. But you know, the end score of this game was, you know, Raiders 37, Chargers 29, and that, you know, someone said that there was a really deceptive score this game. This is by far the most deceptive score of the week. There was a point in this game when it was 37-6. Chargers put up a lot of points in garbage time, but there was never any real, threat of them taking back the lead in this one. Their last touchdown was with like 6 seconds left. It was, you know, this was totally the Oakland Raiders, you know, holiday. And I'm sure Monty has marked this on his calendar and is probably not going to go to work for 4 days because, you know, Derek Carr and the connection between the QB Derek Carr and wide receiver Amari Cooper is pretty amazing. I'm not sure. There's definitely no better QB to wide receiver combination in the division right now. And it's hard to think of many in the conference that are better. I mean, you would say Big Ben to Antonio Brown, but that's literally it. I saw this crazy stat that the only other rookie to have 300-yard receiving games in his first six games was Mike Ditka in 1961, which means that Amari Cooper is literally a better wide receiver than God. So, you know, Monty said on Slack that, you know, that this is sort of represents a changing of the guard. I mean, it's sort of silly because, you know, the Broncos are still at the top, but everyone else in the division has sort of gotten used to never being able to catch them. I do think it's a changing of guard, perhaps at the bottom of the division. I mean, the Chargers just look like, you know, I mean, everyone always overhypes them because they have Phillip Rivers, who is a good quarterback. And it's another one of those symptoms of the conversation we've been having already that, like, oh, well, you know, they have a great quarterback, they have a chance. And that's true, they do have a chance, but they've never had stuff working around them. The execution has never been there. They have no running game. The protection hasn't been very good. Even Rivers, you know, he makes some dumb mistakes. He had a couple of interceptions here. One was on a tipped ball, but one was just an awful throw. And they were not in this game for most of it. I mean, they were making things work at the very end, but they were a total no-show for the first half and really the first three quarters. And they're just not a good football team with a very good quarterback. You know, it's going to be very interesting to see how far the Raiders can go. I mean, they're now 3-3, so they have a real chance of making it to the playoffs for the first time in, you know, eons. So it will be interesting to watch.
Like you were saying, I found it. Ken is the super fan for the Chargers, and he loves to talk trash about the Eagles on the podcast, just talking about we are a trash team and just totally garbage. And I just, it's one of those where it's like, you don't think you understand football, bro. We're a good team with a trashy, possibly quarterback. You're a trash team with a good quarterback. Your team is trash. You have one good player. I wouldn't take any of your other players. Trash. So it just drives me crazy. Some people are just not analyzing properly. Yes. Good quarterback. And he was making that argument. He's like, I'm trying to argue that my team isn't trash because we have one good quarterback. And it's like, no, that is not how it works. You can't have 52 horrible players and one quarterback. It doesn't do it. San Diego, God, just wretched. Dallas, New York Giants. I love this game. I love Dallas pain. I love Dallas fans in pain. This had an amazing at the end. Castle was able to drive all the way down and tie the game up. This pathetic old quarterback who was not having a good game figured it out. He was like, oh, I'll piece it together and barely make it down. And yes, we tied it up. And then they kicked the ball off and Harris runs it back 100 yards. And oh, just love it. Leaving 7 minutes on the clock. And it's like, oh, Castle, I know that took everything you had. Try to do it again. And he couldn't. And they lose the game. Dallas ran the ball very well. The Giants do not have a top 10 run D. Samuel was all so proud of that run defense, and they went from third when they faced us. We knocked them down to sixth, and I'm sure they're going to fall out of the top 10 up this week because Dallas put up close to 200 yards on the ground on them. The Giants do not have a strong front seven. Anybody who thinks that, once again, you're not analyzing football well. Their best player does not have a hand. It's just not happening down there. Something you were to bring up, Tom, before Dez and Hardy had an altercation on the sideline. Do you want to mention what you know about that and thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know if any of you guys know what this was about. I had the volume down, but Dez Bryant got on Greg Hardy for something. They were going back to the sideline. It was after that big return you just talked about, and he was in his ear all the way back to the bench, and I thought Hardy was going to slug him. I mean – his teammates had to get in front of him and separate the two. I really don't know what it was about. I can't imagine what it was, but Dez was upset about something and he was jawing at him about something that he did. So I don't really know what caused that discord. I've been trying to find out online. I haven't been able to yet, but I'm sure it's something we'll be hearing about all week.
Yeah, crazy. Love it. Love it. All the turmoil. I mean, they've just been on such a skid now after Romo's been out. I really don't think they're going to have a chance. I know Brian would disagree. He's the super fan. I know they're like, you know, the narrative that you hear out of Skip Bayless and therefore Cowboys Nation is that, you know, this, you know, they're all going to come back and they're going to be right back to form and a playoff team. And then they're going to take the division. And I just don't think it's going to happen. One, they're going to fall too far behind before they even come back. And then even when they come back, Romo's still going to be a brittle old man, and Dez is going to be trying to run on a broken foot. Like, there's no guarantee they're going to come back and be great. This isn't like when Aaron Rodgers went down a couple years ago and the team just played like crap, and then you put that one great player back and it's all together again. It's like, no. This team has a lot of holes. The defense is still not playing really well. And obviously special teams are not playing really well, cost you the game today. Castle, I think, is not the answer. I would stick with Whedon, personally. I understand Whedon wasn't looking impressive, but your team isn't very good. It's not. There's not enough pieces there for him to do well without his best weapons on offense. It would be better if they had a great running game, they may be able to weather these storms, but I don't think they're going to be able to. We are now 10 minutes away, guys. I'm going to wrap this show up because in 10 minutes. Go ahead.
Yeah, I found the Hardy incident, the description. This is on profootballtalk.com. Hardy was ranting and raving on the field after the kickoff touchdown, pushing teammates and at least one member of the coaching staff, all of whom were trying to calm him down after the touchdown. Eventually, as Hardy was leaving the field, Bryant intervened to say something to Hardy, who then lit into Bryant. So basically, Hardy lost his mind, probably like he thought some woman was in the room.
Yeah, he wasn't able to. I was upset. Everybody and obedient. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Despicable.
I think Dez was mad at Hardy for stealing his shtick. You know, that's what Dez usually does. when he's not happy, like Dez comes out and lets everyone know about it. But going back to what Mark was talking about the Cowboys, I think the bottom line is, if Tony Romo was the quarterback of this Cowboys team, they're the best team in that division. They would have won at least two of the past couple of games if Romo was playing quarterback. And the fact is, he's not. And he's eligible to come back week 11. If Dallas could stay in the hunt within the game, I still think they're the best team and they're going to come out of that division. Unless the Eagles offense shows me something. Because again, I mean, that defense is legit. And we're going to see tonight against a great Carolina team. What's going to happen?
Totally. I mean, it's an amazing test. Yeah. Let's have this conversation next week. I agree with you, Andrew. If he wasn't hurt, they would be in first and we'd be playing catch up. But that's not the world we are in. And we hurt him on a fair play. I don't think that was a cheap shot. So I take pride in that. We took that old man down and we showed why you don't put an old man in the pocket who can't get away. And we broke his little wing-like, chicken wing-like collarbone. And we can do it again. And you drink your milk, old man, with your calcium. I'm just saying, this is the sign of a brittle old man. This is what happens when you put them in there. And he is great, but this is the problem with Palmer. This is the problem with him. This is the problem with Roethlisberger even we're seeing now. These guys are getting too old to play the position. And when you're not like Peyton or Brady, where you make sure you don't get hit, which is not Romo's style, he holds on and he stays in like a Brett Favre. And Favre was invincible. I don't know what that dude did to not get hurt. But Tony's not made of that same metal. And we'll see, but I'm just saying, don't act like this happened in some weird vacuum. He went down this year. That happened. That was real. We did that. I take pride in that. And that you watch in Philly, Jordan Hicks, who hurt him, is a hero now and will be. He's a great linebacker as well. But I agree with you, Andrew. Let's have this talk in a week, because if we go in and beat Carolina tonight, we have to be talked about as a playoff team, and we will be the team that takes this division. Tonight is a big game for us. The nice thing is, if we lose, we're just where we thought we were. We're a struggling team. But if we win, I think this is a big legitimizing game. I think we have a good chance, because I think all we have to stop is Cam Newton and Olsen. And usually, like I said, a quarterback and one passing weapon is not enough. People are really all behind their running game, but I don't think their running game's all that, and we have a good run defense. I think we could win this game. We blew them out last year. It wasn't even close. We had a good game plan for him. Cam couldn't do anything. I know Cam's playing much better this year, but he's got to have a game of his life to beat us. And Bradford could have a horrible game, and that could cost it too. But as long as Bradford plays okay, I think we have a good chance to win this game. We'll see. I'm excited. This is our best game this year. I'm really excited. Go ahead.
Well, by the time everyone hears this, they already know if you sound like a crazy person or if you're just
totally. I don't think I'm crazy either way. Like I said, because I think Sam Bradford could totally poop the bed. I think we all agree the defense is good and has a chance to shut down that offense of the Panthers, which has not been good. Like, the Panthers haven't put together four quarters of football at all, and their combined record of their opponents is 9-20. They have not beaten a winning team yet. We've beaten two of them. We'll see. We'll just see. This is a great test of, is the NFC South really the trash division, or is the NFC East? And I think we may prove today it's not the NFC East. But we'll see. It's going to be a great game. I have mad respect for them. Don't get me wrong. They're a 5-0 team, and any team that does that in the NFL, that is hard to do. And if we do beat them, I will be very proud. I think we are the underdogs. We're going into their house. We should not win this game. But if we do, that's right, Philly. We awesome. All right, so here we go. I enjoy the game. Thank you, guys. That was an awesome show. We are Next Fan Up. You can follow us at NFU Podcast on Twitter. You can look for us on Facebook by just typing in Next Fan Up. I am Mark Sitko. Thank you so much, Andrew. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Nick. I really appreciate it, guys. On Thursday, come back, please, for the previews of Week 8. We'll have Jay Soderberg, our fearless leader, rocking those shows. Everybody, have a good night.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.